Apple sets a time and date for its next big event. The new way to secure your Zoom account. Fake Amazon reviews, plus your tech questions answered. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMiro, and this is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about the tech stuff I think you should know about. It's also the place where I answer the questions that you send me. What's going on? My name is Rich DeMiro, tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. Welcome, welcome, welcome. How's it going working and schooling from home? I have been working from home. I can't believe that it is now September. Can you? September. Where did the time go? I remember going out for Memorial Day weekend, like thinking that was the first kind of kickoff to the summer. And here we are past Labor Day. Summer's over. And we are into the thick of school, into work, into just everything. And we've gotten used to working from home. I kind of enjoy it at this point. And I think that there are some advantages to it. There's some disadvantages, but everyone's sleeping longer, except me, since I still wake up pretty early for the news. But my wife and kids are sleeping longer because they don't have a commute anymore. There's no rush to get in the shower and get dressed and get on the commute to work and school. So now everyone just kind of rolls out of bed. They have some breakfast. They watch some TV. And then it's the reality of work. And here in Los Angeles last week, man, it was hot. Woo! It was really, really hot last week. And now we've got some fires going on in California. I think that's an understatement. So these are some interesting times. For me, it is getting into the thick of gadget season. We've got so many new gadgets coming out in the next couple of months. We just got through all of Samsung stuff, and now we are going to get into all of Apple stuff and maybe even some of Google stuff and Microsoft stuff and Sony stuff. So it is a time for gadgets. Right before the holidays, this is when everything is announced. And sadly, I am sending back my Note 20 Ultra today, along with the Z Fold, but I didn't really think I would use that phone. But Note 20 Ultra, I have to say, still one of my favorite phones. So if you are thinking of making the switch to a Samsung device or the Note device, the Note 20 Ultra was one of my favorite phones I have tested in the past 5 years, I'd say. And so with that said, the biggest problem I had with the Note 20 Ultra was the size. And the thing that I wanted was a smaller version. And I kind of contemplated, in fact, let me see, it was actually on sale on Amazon for, I had it in my, let's see, my browsing history. I had the Note 20, the regular version, in my browsing, in my Amazon cart for a moment. Ah, the price went back up again. Darn it. Oh, wait, maybe it didn't. Hold on. Nope, it's still $200 off. The Note 20, not the big one, not the Ultra, but the regular Note 20 is $800, which is still expensive, but you just don't get a couple things that I want on there. But anyway, I will be happy. My iPhone is right here. It's not as exciting as some of the Samsung devices that I've been testing, but it still works. And for social media, you know I've talked about this. It's still better. Let's get into the first big story of the podcast. Apple officially announces its September 15th event. This was really funny because, so here's what happened. Everyone was waiting because there's a big rumor that they would announce this event on Tuesday, September 8th, I think it was. Yes, that is correct. And so all the people are just sitting there refreshing Apple's website, refresh, 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 looking at their email, refresh, refresh, waiting for this invite as journalists that we get. Well, Apple did something kind of funny this year. They put the information on their website first, and then they waited a little bit, and then they sent out the invitation. So we got two different stories. At first, all the people that saw the information on the website said, yes, we have our big iPhone event happening September 15th, 10 a.m. Pacific. And then after everyone tweeted that and screenshotted that, they sent out the invitation to journalists, including myself, that had two extra words on it that the website did not. And it said, time flies, which immediately everyone realized that, oh, this is about the Apple Watch and not necessarily the iPhone, because we know that the iPhone supposedly is delayed this year. So as it stands, September 15th, 10 a.m. Pacific, you can watch the live stream of Apple's next big event, and we are expected to see new Apple Watches and a new iPad Air. That's according to Bloomberg. They say that the iPhone 12 will launch later in October. And that makes sense because we've heard with the pandemic that things are a little bit delayed. So am I excited for new Apple Watch and new iPad Air? Yes, the new iPads. I am excited because I'd like to buy my kids new iPads. It's been a while. It's been, I think, 4 years now, and they need a new iPad, both of them. So I am excited for that. My one kid's iPad is all cracked and it just needs to get a new one. And they're just small, and I'd ideally like to get them iPad minis. I'm not sure if they're refreshing that, but whatever it is, I just need to buy new iPads. So I will be very excited for the iPad situation. And Apple Watch, I mean, I can't imagine what they're going to add to the Apple Watch that would make me more excited about it. I think the current Apple Watch is near perfect, except for battery life, but I've gotten so used to charging it every night anyway. The other thing is that the, we'll see. So that's that. And I don't know what more to say about the Apple event. It's going to be exciting. It's virtual. I'm not going up there, so that saves me, you know, the time and effort of going up to Cupertino. It's always fun to go up there, but it's just not happening that way right now. So we will see what happens with Apple. Maybe they'll throw us some surprises, throw us some loops, but right now, as it stands, we're looking forward to new Apple Watches and new iPads, perhaps maybe some smaller gadgets like an AirTag, but I think that's coming with the iPhone. And even with the iPhone, I mean, what more do you want with that? I mean, except for people that are just waiting to upgrade, and 5G is cool, but we know that 5G is not necessarily all there just yet. So let's get to our first question. This comes from, let's see, Lisa says, good morning. Good morning. I have a tech question for you. I recently purchased a Roku to save money and lose our cable during this difficult time. Would like to still have some basic channels and some sports. Do you recommend any particular app for this? Thank you for your time and input. Love the Channel 5 news. Well, thank you, Lisa. So you ditched cable, which was a smart move to get, save some money here. And you have a Roku. So the good news is Roku has pretty much everything you need with the exception right now of HBO Max and also, HBO Max and what's the other one that's not on there right now? HBO Max. I'm blanking right now. There's two. What was the one that just came? Anyway, so Hulu has a lot of what you need. The problem is you're looking for sports, which is kind of tricky. I will tell you one app that I think is pretty cool that I think is kind of like having cable, but for free, and it's called Pluto TV. And this is, I kind of tell these stories, but I've been wrong about a couple of things several times in my tech career, and I'm human, I get it, it happens. But I'll never forget sitting there with this guy at lunch who told me that he started this new app called Pluto TV, and I didn't get it. I literally sat there and told this guy, he's like, you know, maybe you should do a story on it. I'm like, why? Come on, dude. There's so many streaming apps out there. This was many years ago. And I'm not kidding. I sat there at lunch as he told me all about Pluto and how it was going to be like cable, but for free. And I just didn't get it. It did not register in Rich DeMuro's mind that this was a $300 million idea, because a couple of years later, that's how much Viacom paid him for Pluto TV. So needless to say, I was wrong. He was right. And sometimes, I will be honest, sometimes I am told stuff so early in the game that my little brain cannot process just how big of an idea this is. Now, I'm not saying that's all the time. When I remember the Microsoft came in and told me about the Surface, I got it immediately. And while no one else could understand how a tablet could be a PC and how a PC could be a tablet and touchscreen and pen and all this stuff, I got that. And it took a while for the rest of the world to catch on to that idea. But with the Pluto TV situation, I just didn't really get it. I said, why would you want this? I downloaded it when I got home. I watched it for about 5 minutes. It seemed to me that it was YouTube, but strung together. you know, one video after another, which I kind of like, but I'd rather just watch what I want to watch by keying in keywords. Well, now I get it. Pluto has really done a good job of expanding, and when you download the app, it's fast. The channels change like cable channels. There's a whole bunch of stuff to watch for free, and I'm very impressed. And someone at Viacom was much smarter than me because they capitalized on it and bought it from this guy, and now the rest, as they say, is history. So, Lisa, to answer your question, I would start with something like I would just go through Roku and look at the top channels. Everything is represented there. So if you want, you know, entertainment, sports, whatever, you're going to get it. The problem is what it's going to be tough to do is local news in certain aspects, and sports are really tricky too, because usually you have to pay for those. The other website I'd recommend is untangle.tv. So if you want to pay for a little bit of something, you might want to look at that. The other service that gives you a lot of channels for a little bit is Philo, P-H-I-L-O. Philo is a cable kind of streaming service that's $20 a month for a whole bunch of channels, 50 channels, plus a DVR. And what you'll find is there's no sports on there. That's how they save money. But they've got all the cable channels, like or a lot of them. AMC, Animal Planet, DIY, Food Network, FYI, Game Show Network, MTV, Lifetime, No Oxygen, Nicktoons, Nick Jr. So they have a lot of stuff on there. But again, go to untangle.tv and pop in the things that you want to watch, the things that you like, and just see if that gets what you need. But if you canceled cable to save money, personally, I would just not subscribe to anything and just see what you can get for free through these streaming services. On the live stream, folks are recommending Peacock. There's a bunch of stuff there. You can get a bunch for free streaming. Just go ahead and, like I said, look at the top channels on Roku and just see what interests you. Oh, whoops, sorry. Wrong sound effect. I'm going to a story right now. Microsoft unveiled details on the Xbox Series S and the Xbox Series X. S and X. Say that 10 times fast. And here is an interesting part. I believe they've had this before, but you can now basically rent to own an Xbox. So it starts at $25 a month. Here, let me give you details. November 10th, that is when the Xbox Series X and the Xbox Series S will be available. Pre-orders are already, oh no, they're starting on September 22nd. So let's talk about the Xbox Series S. This is the, I guess, the inexpensive model. This is the cheaper one, all digital. And that means it's still fast, still, you know, has what you need, but it's a small, sleek Xbox that I believe does not have any sort of CD drive, disc drive, whatever. It's all digital. So that's kind of the entry-level model that I think a lot of people will like, but if you're a true gamer, you're probably going to be more interested in the Xbox Series X. The Xbox Series S, by the way, is $300. Then you've got the X, which is the, you know, the big boy. It's the real deal. Everything that you need. $500 for that one. And again, these are both, you know, big new gaming platforms. Gaming consoles, I should say. And that's what you need to know. So, pricing. Let's talk about the prices. They are doing this Xbox All Access. And so, for 24 months, you pay and you get this console. Your choice. So, here's what you get. You get the console of your choice. Then you get 100 high-quality games to play on that console, including next-gen optimized games. Then you get 100 high-quality games to play on your PC. Then you get an EA Play membership, so you can play 60 of EA's biggest games and 100 games to play from the cloud. So a whole bunch of games. Now, it sounds great. I'm counting this up, 100, 200, 260, 360 games to play. How many of these games are you actually going to play? Probably not many. The games that you actually want to play are probably still going to cost you the $60 or whatever they cost for a new game. Now, I'm not a huge gamer, so I can't really comment on how many games are in this Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, but I'm sure there's some. It's kind of like the Nintendo Switch or Apple Arcade. You're going to find stuff to play, but is it going to be the latest, greatest, best games that you want to play? Probably not in every circumstance. How much does this cost? $25 for 24 months for the Xbox Series S. If you want the X, which is the bigger, badder machine, that's going to be $35 a month for 24 months. I'll do the math for you. Save you the math. And that is $600 or $840. So how much are you paying extra? You're paying an extra $300 on top of the small one, $340 on top of the big one. So you have to decide in 2 years, is $300 or $340 worth all those games you get? And also the, the pricing plan. So if you like to pay monthly, it might seem like a better deal because it's only $25 a month. It's only $35 a month. No big deal. But you're actually paying $300 in interest or $340 in interest in the form of games. So I'm not going to tell you whether that's good or bad. You can decide on your own. But I will tell you that both of these Xbox consoles are backwards compatible with thousands of generations or games from four generations of Xboxes. So that's kind of cool because that's always a big question. Will these play old games? And I think that, I think that my kid wants the Xbox. It's going to be Xbox versus PlayStation. I think he wants the Xbox because he wants to do Minecraft. And Minecraft on a console, he's been asking for it for a while. So that will probably be the direction we go in the DeMuro household. But again, now you know. Next question from Kirsten. I never know if it's K-I. I guess that's Kirsten, right? Kirsten says, hi, Rich. Have you done a review on the new Samsung Galaxy Watch 3? I have not, and I'll tell you why. I wore the Samsung Galaxy Watch 3 for about 24 hours, and that was it. That was about all I could take of it. So I don't want to knock it. I'm sure that if you have an Android and a Samsung device, it's great. I just could not get into it. And especially at the price, $400, it just did not seem like something that was what I wanted. And it's the Samsung Galaxy Watch 3. It has a leather band, number one, which I immediately don't like because I feel like I'm not trying to get a watch for looks. I'm trying to get a watch for fitness situations. And I don't know. So, Kirsten, I did not do a formal review because I just did not see the mainstream appeal of that device at that price. And so maybe I'll change my mind and do it, but I just have not gotten a lot of interest from it either. And also, I'll be totally honest. I think that the Fitbit Sense, the new Fitbit coming out, is a way better fit for an Android user and a lot of iPhone users out there. Now, I think the Apple Watch is always going to be best. But I think when it comes to, in general, for Android, I just feel like the Fitbit is a better device. It just has more features. It has a better price point. It's already down to $300 on Amazon, down from $330. And I just think it just seems better to me. I've not tested it yet, so I don't know for sure, but that's my feeling. So I just didn't really see the big appeal of the Samsung Galaxy Watch 3, and I could be wrong. Maybe I'm wrong like I was about the other thing, the Pluto TV. But at the same time, that's why I didn't cover it. I played with it for a little bit, and it just there's literally no apps available. There's just not much on there. It's like the same thing that I opened up a couple years ago when I checked out the Galaxy Watch the last time. There has been no movement on that device whatsoever. There's no music apps. I mean, if I look at my Apple Watch, every app I install on my iPhone, there's a companion app that goes onto the Apple Watch. Google Maps just came to the Apple Watch after many years of not being there. There's just a lot of progress with the Apple Watch, and I just have not seen that same progress with the adoption of Samsung's watch. And when it comes to something like Fitbit, I feel like they have progressively gotten better and better and better and kind of honed things. But at the same time, I just think that's a better choice for most people. So I will be reviewing the Fitbit. I don't think they're sending it to me, so I will be purchasing that myself and definitely getting that on a review because I feel like people need to know about that watch. The Fitbit Sense just seems like they put everything we need in a smartwatch for the Android side, from sleep to temperature scanning to all kinds of stuff. And it has a 6-day battery life. So to me, that's where my money is. And I think that that's where your money should be if you're looking for a watch for the Android side of things. If you're looking for iPhone side of things, I still think you got to go Apple Watch because it just integrates so well with their iPhone that I can't imagine going with something else. Unless sleep is your primary, sleep and battery life are your primary motivations for a watch, then I think the Sense would be good for you for that. But again, I haven't tested it yet. So that's, you know, and again, this podcast is called Rich on Tech. It's my opinion. It's what I see in the world. So if you listen to an Android podcast or a Samsung podcast, they may say that the Samsung Galaxy Watch 3 is the best thing ever invented. I don't know if that's the case. I am very quick to judge things when it comes to some of this tech. And to me, when I put that watch on, it just felt like a step backwards. And so I feel like you have to just go with your gut sometimes on these things, even though, yes, I'm wrong sometimes. But at the same time, you know, I tried it. I did a run with it. I did a bike thing with it. It just didn't give me the satisfaction that I get from the Apple Watch or even from when I wore the Fitbit. I wore the Versa for a long, long time over the Apple Watch. And I think the Fitbit Versa 3 looks very promising. I think the Inspire. I think what Fitbit is doing is very good when it comes to just everyday general fitness and tracking. That's what you want to go with. All right. So in Los Angeles, you know, everyone's talking about COVID-19 and I hope you're safe from that. And I hope you're doing well with that. But this whole idea of contact tracing. So if you're familiar with that idea of contact tracing, it means that if you come down with COVID, someone out there in the health department wants to know, well, who did you come into contact with? Because we need to call them and they need to be aware of this and potentially get tested. And so the tech companies, Apple and Google, they came up with a system that's built into all of the iPhones and all of the Androids. And it's a really good system that uses Bluetooth to track you where you go, but not location. Just track who you come into contact with. And if you come into contact with someone that gets COVID-19 and they report it to their phone, then it will be reported to you all anonymously. Well, it's getting some pickup, but not a lot. Well, Los Angeles County decided to go with Citizen and an app that they have called SafePass. And it's the same idea. You go into this app every day and you report whether you have COVID or symptoms or testing or whatever, and it will tell the folks that you've come into contact with if they should get tested because, well, you came down with COVID. Well, the big difference here is that when I downloaded the SafePass app, which is being promoted all over the place because County of Los Angeles decided to go with it, all of a sudden I noticed that there was no login, there was no whatever, but it was somehow linked to my Citizen app, which I love Citizen, by the way. If you don't have the Citizen app on your phone, get it. It's awesome. It tells you all the insane crime happening around your house, and it's scary. And it's scary in a good way because you feel very informed, but you don't know what to do about it. But you know what's going on in your neighborhood. Well, with SafePass, I was a little bit perturbed because before I downloaded it, I looked all over the permissions on iPhone and Android, and all I saw was Bluetooth, 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 nothing about GPS. And so when I downloaded it, it said, oh, here are the people in your neighborhood, and it gave my neighborhood name and said, here's how many people are using it. I said, well, that's odd because I never gave you access to my location. So what's going on here? Well, I figured since I had Citizen downloaded on my phone, which needs location to work, that somehow SafePass was sort of piggybacking on their data. And my hunch was correct. Because I emailed Citizen and I got a response. And let me read you their response. I said, does it use location? And they said, if a SafePass user already has Citizen downloaded and location enabled, SafePass will use this information to provide you with the location as well as the time, date, duration, and around a potential COVID-19 exposure. So the user can decide. All location data is deleted after 30 days. Okay, fine, but here's my problem with that. You need to tell me that you are using my location, especially with something that is purportedly tracking me 24/7 every single place I go. Now, I know that the Citizen app has been doing this, and I like that because in return, I get a really good product for free, which is crime alerts around where I am. But I know that that's doing that, and SafePass never told me it was doing that. Now, I took it a step further, specifically saying, I see that it only asks for Bluetooth in permissions, but is it piggybacking on location data from the Citizen app or otherwise sourcing it? I ask because I see that when I activated SafePass, it said where I was located and how many other people in my city were using the app. Here's what their response was. SafePass depends on Citizen for GPS data for now. And eventually, all users will benefit from the GPS-enabled features. If you're logged into Citizen with location permissions enabled and then download SafePass, the accounts link so that the user's Citizen app will provide GPS data to the user's SafePass app. What? Hold on. You need to tell us this. This was not revealed in any way, shape, or form to the citizens of Los Angeles downloading this app. Now, they say, users who have both Citizen and SafePass are informed of GPS data location via our privacy policies. Okay, when was the last time you read a privacy policy while you downloaded an app? Exactly, never. So, I don't like this. Further, for now, if you don't have Citizen downloaded and location enabled, if you download SafePass, SafePass will not use GPS location. So what I get from this, if you want to protect your privacy and you don't want SafePass to keep a location of where you are at all times with GPS, you can download the app by first deleting your Citizen app off your phone, but then you don't get the benefit of Citizen. Now, I am not saying that it's bad that it's using location to do this COVID tracing. I think that there is definitely a level of privacy that you're giving up if you decide to go that route. And the route that this app is going is specifically the route that Apple and Google wanted to avoid because they specifically do not use your GPS location for their COVID-19 exposure notifications. They use only Bluetooth, and that is the most private way. And I'm not saying that it's a big deal. If you don't care, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't really care about your location, then it's not that big of a deal. Where I take issue with this is the fact that nowhere, except in the privacy policy, did they tell us that this is happening. And I don't like that. I feel like that's not very nice to do to people. And so for an app that the County of Los Angeles is using and endorsing, I feel like people should know they throw around Bluetooth, but realistically they're using location. So they really need to make that clear. And I suspect as more people kind of realize this, I suspect that the Citizen website will change. And in fact, I'm taking a screenshot of it right now because right now it says with SafePass, you can track your symptoms, find testing sites, and enable Bluetooth contact tracing to get alerted. I have a feeling they are going to change that wording because when people realize that it's more than just Bluetooth, yeah, that will change. Speaking of privacy, am I getting fired up yet? I love getting fired up in this podcast because it's my place to get fired up. But here's something that you need to do today on your Zoom account, and it's called two-factor authentication. And if you've heard me blab on in this podcast over and over and over and over and over, you've heard me talk about two-factor authentication. Two-factor authentication is probably the best way to secure your accounts. What it means is that if you're using the same password over and over or a variation of your password over and over for all your accounts, which I know you are, I know you're out there, I know a couple of you are. If you're doing that, which I highly recommend not doing, you need to enable two-factor authentication, which makes things a little bit more secure. So what two-factor authentication does is when someone gets a hold of that tired old password that you're using everywhere and they enter it to log into your accounts, it will say, oh, okay, well, hey, we also need to get a text message that we just texted to your phone. And the hacker goes, oh, darn it, I don't have that person's phone. So in that aspect, they can't log in. So it basically stops these logins from happening when people get your password because you use a really weak password. So it's protecting you from yourself. And so Zoom recently enabled this for everyone, and I highly, highly recommend that you enable it. It works with both a SMS, which is a text to your phone, or a password authentication app, which there are many of them. Google Authenticator, Microsoft Authenticator, or Authy is another one. And just pick one of those. It takes a little bit to set it up. Don't lose your password to that account. But those are the things that are a little bit more secure than using your phone to do this. But at the minimum, use your phone for SMS. Here's how you do it. Go to zoom.us/profile. You're going to have to log in and then scroll to where it says two-factor authentication. You're going to have to log in again when you say turn on. And you turn it on, follow the steps, it will be turned on, and your life will be better for it, especially if you're a teacher. You do not want someone hacking into your Zoom account. I don't know if a lot of people are hacking into Zoom accounts. I know that like Zoom bombing is a big thing. This doesn't really help with that, but it will help from someone getting access to your account. You just don't want people to have access to your account. All right, let's see here. Let's see. Amanda says, good morning. I guess a lot of people write me emails in the morning. I guess, you know what? It's probably because they see me on TV and then it's like, boom, they want to email me. Cause like, oh yeah, I got to email that guy that's always on my TV talking about tech. Good morning. Can I get your suggestions on the best apps to monitor your teenage kid on social media and personal texts? Thank you, Amanda. Amanda, I recommend the same thing to everyone. And it is called Bark, bark.us. And the reason why I like Bark is because while I have not used this with my children, I feel like they are the most, I don't know, it just seems like they do it right. They can do a lot of stuff. They can monitor 30 of the most popular apps and social media platforms, including text messaging and email. And they use artificial intelligence. So what I like is that they actually don't, there's some services that just give you a list of all of your kids' stuff and you have to like go through it and look at it. What Bark does is it kind of like monitors using AI. So it will kind of tell you when it notices something that's a little bit off. Now it's not always going to be right, but I kind of like that approach better than you having to read every one of your kids' text messages. To me, that seems better. And this works with a lot of stuff, iPhone, Android, Chrome, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, Gmail, WhatsApp, Kick, TikTok, Skype. It works with a lot of stuff. And I think that that's pretty good. It looks for signs of harmful interactions and content. And so it will give you a little alerts that tell you when you need to kind of give something a human eye. And so I really like that. I don't know. I just think it looks really good. And I hate the fact that we have to do this, but the reality is we do. And, how much is it? It is $5 a month or $50 a year for Bark Junior. And that is something that you don't really, that's just managing screen time and filtering websites. So realistically, if you want to get the most out of Bark with all of the monitoring, the apps, it's $15 a month or $100 for the year, which it sounds like a lot, but that's a small price to pay for peace of mind with your kid. I am dealing with this with my kids, with Minecraft and Roblox. They want to be able to... Minecraft, I figured it out where they can chat with just their friends. With Roblox, it's a whole different story. You know I'm not a fan of Roblox. If it was up to me, it'd be banned in my home, but I know all the kids play it, so my kids do get to play it, but they are highly restricted. And the problem with Roblox is that there's a lot of stuff going on there that I don't like. There's a lot of chat. It's very sticky. The kids love it. Gets them playing all day long. They can chat with their friends, but there's just a lot of stuff going on in there. So I don't like that. They are not allowed to chat, and they're always asking me, and the games are restricted. And my kid is like, oh, can I just unrestrict my games? And then you can go through every week and kind of see the games I've played. I don't want to do that. I don't want to just sit there and go through every game you've played and see if it's a bad game or not. So I just restrict them, and it does limit what they can do. And so anyway, I digress. That's what I'm dealing with. All right, if you have a Vizio TV, you can get the Apple TV app on your Vizio TV now. This was a holdout for a while. But if you have a Vizio SmartCast TV, you can now get the Apple TV app. What does that mean? Well, that means that you can watch all of your Apple TV content and any movie that you've purchased on Apple TV. You can watch that on your Vizio now, and also Apple TV Plus, which I know you've been wanting to watch. I mean, there are a couple things on there that are pretty good. The morning show is the only thing I've watched on there. I do want to watch the Boys State documentary because I did Boys State when I was a kid. I loved Boys State, but I watched the trailer and it didn't really appeal to me. It was like, it looked good, but like, it didn't look like something I need to watch like that day. For a limited time, Vizio SmartCast customers in the US can sign up for Apple TV Plus and get 3 months free. I like that. 3 months free is always nice. And Apple TV Plus, if you've purchased an Apple product, you get a year free of that. I wonder if you can stack those. Probably not. So what can you do on Apple TV? You can subscribe to Apple TV channels like Showtime, CBS All Access, and Stars. And, of course, get the Apple TV Plus content. You can also rent and buy 100,000 movies, which you can already do in other ways. And you have AirPlay 2 and HomeKit. So this will work on Vizio TVs with SmartCast 2016 and later. So if you have a Vizio TV, there you go. By the way, the 3 free months expires October 16th. So you have until then to sign up for it. You can go to vizio.com/Apple offer for more information on that. So grab your 3 months free of Apple TV Plus and at least watch the morning show. That was pretty good. There might be some other stuff on there that you might like, but that's the only thing I found that I liked. There's a movie with Tom Hanks called Greyhound on there. And so that looks good as well. Let's see what else. I think that's it. Well, that's it for that. The podcast's not over. Don't get me wrong. We're still going. We still got time. We still got another question. Let's get to the next question. Let's see. Good morning, Rich. Another good morning. I currently have the Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus. I'm looking for a screen protector. Do you recommend any particular brand that is case friendly? Thank you for your time, and I look forward to hearing from you. Jose B. Well, I will tell you the brands that I have used in the past that I've had good luck with and like, and number one on the list is TechArmor. I love TechArmor because they are cheap, but they're also good. So the guy from TechArmor, I forget where he came from, but he had a lot of experience with tech, and I forget what his background was. But now, he came to me with TechArmor, and immediately I understood it. Because I said, dude, everyone else is charging $50 for a screen protector. You're charging $10. Like, what's the catch? He said, nothing. We're just not doing it at mall kiosks. So we can charge a lot less because we're going straight to Amazon. And on Amazon, you can find a lot of stuff out there. But you want to go with brands that you know. So I'm looking on here, and do they have the Samsung Galaxy S9? And yes, they do. And this is a little bit of a curved screen. So I think that's why you're saying, is it case friendly? But they've got it. TechArmor 3D curved HD clear ballistic glass. And it is $12.95 for, does it come in a 3-pack? Sometimes they come in like a 2-pack. Oh, 1-pack. Okay. So it's $12.95 for one. So that's the one that I'd recommend. Go with that. And that's the first choice. The other choices are Zag. Zag is great. I really like their screen protectors. They do charge they do charge a little bit more. So if you go into the mall, you are going to get, I think Invisible Shield is the brand name from Zag, but you're going to pay a little bit more, but you know what? It's going to be high quality. Now, let's see. Do they have the S9? And they do. S9. Did you have an S9 Plus or an S9? You have an S9 Plus. So S9 Plus, let me see how much it is for Zag. Zag is $29.99, used to be $50. So you're going to pay a little bit more for Zag. I keep calling it Zag, but Invisible Shield. I think, does Zag also do, no, yeah, Zag, I don't know. But anyway, it's Invisible Shield is the Zag brand. But they also, so anyway, those are the two that I'd recommend. I would look into those. You know, it depends. You want to pay $30 or do you want to pay $13? Maybe start with the 13, and if you don't like it, go to the 30. But those are the screen protectors I put on my phones, and I like them. Now, I will tell you, I did put a screen protector on my iPhone this week, and this is what I love about screen protectors. When they break or they crack, you just peel it off and you put on a new one, and it's like you have a new phone. And I'll be honest, with the Note 20, I did not have a screen protector on there because I did not get them in time for my testing, and I dropped the phone. It survived for the most part, but there is a little tiny scratch on the screen, and that's just annoying when you do that. And so it's just one of those things that when you have a scratch on your screen, it's really, really annoying. And so that's that. By the way, if you're asking questions on Facebook Live, I will get to those, but at the end of the podcast. I always do the Facebook Live questions at the end, so stick around till the end, and I will get to some of those questions. But that's, you know, you got to have a screen protector. And okay, so my story was that I put on a screen protector that was a matte finish. And I don't remember putting a matte finish on there. I like the privacy ones, but I can't really use them because I record a lot on my screen when I do little tips and tricks for you. So I can't really have a privacy one because if you're at just the wrong angle, it's going to look weird. It just doesn't look as good on camera. But I like the privacy ones. Those are kind of cool because, you know, everyone's creeping on your phone. They're trying to see what you're looking at, especially if you're commuting or something or at work. You don't want all those eyes on your phone. They don't need to see that you're on Instagram the whole day because that's what you're doing. But I don't like matte screen protectors. It's really off-putting for some reason. I am so used to a shiny phone screen that I put this matte screen protector on my iPhone and it looks so weird. It's just like, it feels like my phone is messed up. And it always looks grimy too, which I don't like. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it. All right. Peloton, which has been the belle of the ball during the pandemic, they have a couple of new devices, a new bike and a new treadmill. I'm not going to go over the new treadmill because you can just look that up. But the new bike is called the Bike Plus. And if you can believe it, it's actually more expensive than the last Peloton bike. This one is $2,500. And so the old one was like $2,200, I think, or something like that. So what do they do new? It's got a new 23.8 inch rotating HD touchscreen. So the old one was a little bit smaller. It was like 2 inches smaller and it did not rotate left and right. So what happens is when you're done with a Peloton, this is a spin bike, by the way, when you're done with a workout, you want to be able to spin your screen left or right so that you can do kind of the stretching or the strength exercises that they have. And you couldn't do that before. And so now you can rotate it 180 degrees left and right. They've got a new, better speaker system. But to me, I think that's pointless because who listens to the speaker on their Peloton? Don't you just have headphones in? And then this is really cool. You can now tap to pair your Apple Watch. And my old gym, before I canceled my membership because of the pandemic, had this on some of their treadmills where you would just tap your Apple Watch to the treadmill and it would sync up the results, which was really cool. So because you're on a treadmill inside, you might not get the proper results from your Apple Watch. So of course the treadmill knows exactly how far you've gone. So it syncs that up. That's really cool. That's a great feature. And then they have this new auto follow digital resistance. So if you put your metrics in, like what your target metrics are, when the teacher calls out, okay, you got to be at 30 resistance right now, the bike will automatically adjust to that resistance, which is really cool. It's kind of like autopilot. Again, it's $2,500 for the new Bike Plus. It's available September 9th, which is already passed, so you're good there. And the original Peloton bike is going down to $1,900, which is kind of cool. Don't forget, on top of all these prices, you still have to pay $40 a month for their service, for their membership. And if you have an original Peloton bike in the U.S. in working condition, you can trade it in for $700 towards the new one, which I thought was really cool. They don't have to do that. They'll even pick it up from your house. And if you bought a bike in the past 30 days, they will refund you the $350 price difference, which is how much the price of the bike dropped, the original one. So I think Peloton has done a solid here. And that's it. I mean, Peloton's fantastic. I don't have one. I have a imitation bike that I use the Peloton app with, and it's fantastic. It's the Bowflex C6, if you're interested. I know when I mentioned that on my Instagram, everyone was like, what bike do you have? I love it. If I was going to buy another one, I'd probably buy the Peloton. I just could not get over the $40 a month membership fee. For the app, I pay, I think it's $13 a month, which is a lot cheaper. And so if you're fine with all those fees, by the time you, most people are buying the Peloton on payments. So by the time you add up the payment with the monthly payment for the app, I think you're talking, what is that? 80 and 80. That's a 40 and 80. That's yet. I don't know. Oh yeah. $50 a month plus 40. That's $90 a month for the bike. So now that seemed like a lot to me when I was paying for a gym membership. Now that I'm not paying for a gym membership, it doesn't seem as high. So I understand where Peloton's coming from. I don't like to do monthly payments on things. So for me, I would want to pay the whole thing in advance, and $2,500 out the door, that's a lot. But I'd save up for it. That's the way I'd do it. But I think most people, many people like, you know, the idea of $40 a month, $50 a month. Oh, it's just monthly. I'll have a job forever, but you never know. Clearly, as we saw during this pandemic, a lot of people were affected. And so that's why I don't like to do the monthly payments, because you never know. You never know when, you know, what you're getting monthly is not coming in anymore. I know it's a negative way of looking at it, but it's just better. You have more of your money. But anyway, I'm not going to get it. This is not a financial podcast. But so anyway, I am now doing Orange Theory when that restarts. So I feel like, you know, paying for that and then paying for the bike, whatever. You don't need to know how I'm staying in shape, but I'm just saying $90 a month if you're just using that bike to work out at home, along with, you know, YouTube and all that other stuff, or the app, it's fine. You're gonna, that's a pretty decent price to pay. $100 a month, it's not that big of a deal. A lot of gyms are, you know, 50, 60, 70, $100 a month. If you go to a fancy gym, it's gonna be $200 a month. I don't know anything about that because I never belonged to one of those. So expensive. I think that's going to do it for the end of the show. I think I'm done preaching about all kinds of stuff. That is going to do it for this episode of the show. Oh, wow. The music's coming up so fast. If you'd like to submit a question for me to answer, just go to richontech.tv, hit the email button at the bottom of the page. That will direct you to me. And I would also love it if you would rate and review this podcast to help other people discover it. Just go to ratethispodcast.com/richontech. And thank you for your ratings and reviews. You can find me at Rich on Tech. I'm on all social media platforms right there. If you're watching on Facebook, stick around to the end and I will answer some of your questions. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe. We'll talk to you real soon.